take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your $10 million in offense of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I want to get married like the Curry, Steph and Aisha. But we more like Belly, Tommy and Keisha. Gave you TLC, you want to creep and poured out my whole heart to a piece of man, I thought you would have learned a lesson. About liking pictures, not returning texts. I guess it's fine, man. I get the message. You still stutter after certain questions. You keep in contact with certain exes. Do you though? Trust me, it's cool though. Said that you was working, but you out here chasing who knows. But you lies, chilling poolside, living two lives. I could've did what you did to me to you a few times. But if I did decide to slide, find somebody, let him hit. You would have been pissed, but that's not my MO. I'm not that type of boo. And karma for you is gonna be who you end up with. Don't make me sick.
Man, baby, I adore. I gave you everything, was mine, is yours. I want you to live your life, of course. But I hope you get what you're dying for. Be careful with me. Do you know what you're doing? Whose feelings that you're hurting and bruising? You gon' gain the whole.
It's an emotional time. We're coming up on the end of the year. Joe's here. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Unless something goes wrong, this will be the final podcast of the year. You should be hearing this around the holidays because we like to give you a gift at the end of the year. But really, you guys have given us the gifts in the form of heat rock questions at the popcast at nytimes.com email address. So for the year's final podcast episode, it's listener mailbag. A lot of heat this year.
Is this second annual listener mailbag?
That's true. I do want to start, though. This is a podcast first. I want to start with some corrections and clarifications.
Okay. We have a lot. We have a lot. We got corrected a lot on Twitter this week.
We did. So when we did the Grammys.
Which we appreciate.
When we did the Grammys and albums podcast, it was kind of like a back-to-back burner. We were just sort of running hot. Pistons were firing. And so we might have fudged a couple things. There might have been a couple things that weren't 100% right. So I just want to clarify. These are more clarifications.
Okay.
Maybe one of them's a correction. Okay, so number one, I do know the difference between Yosemite and Yellowstone.
I don't.
Okay. I do, especially because I was there with Kanye West. Especially since I was there with Kanye for the story that I did this year.
Where were you? I still don't know the answer.
In Yellowstone National Park.
Not Yosemite. Which is the song with Nav on Astroworld.
Which is a great song. And Gunna.
And Gunna,
a great song.
I think that's what had
Let's
us confused.
Let's play some Yosemite.
Hands on my knee, dollars begins. Hop off a jet, barely get risk. Cash through the mud and I get a check. You selling run on my pants and my chest. Chanel address, clean up a mess. I eat a flesh. Now that I'm home, back off the road, we shut it down, where they sold. Checks on the streets, J number four, Saint Laurent feet, put it on toes. Take it with me, double your dose, covered with angels that's watching my soul. Jack out of bed, it's bigger windows. Said I beat the intent, but I got the info. I feel like I'm chosen, I'm covered in gold. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm chosen,
mm-hmm. Okay, the title of that song is not where I was. I was in Yellowstone, which is next to Grand Teton National Park.
And I screwed us up originally because I said you went to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Joe has never been west of New Jersey.
That's basically true.
So no more geography guidance from Joe. So I apologize to all of our listeners west of New Jersey or anywhere out in the great northwest of our country. I apologize. Number two, we are aware that Nas did put out a record this summer. Kinda.
It was part of the good music five.
It was part of the good music five.
So this one I will not take the blame for, because I was like, guys, wasn't there more than four? And you guys were like, no, it was four.
I'm willing to own that. So that was a real thing.
Was he the last one?
No, I think Tiana was the last one.
Man,
weren't you? You were at that thing.
Yeah, it was Tiana.
So that was
the
last one.
Nas got lost, huh?
Cop Shot the Kid.
You like
good
that song?
Well, good sample.
It's on Jay-Z's Songs of the Year list.
Is it?
Playlist on Tidal.
Wow, what a weird backhanded way to say a nice thing about Kanye West. Yeah. Very strange. So anyway, apologies for not getting that right. We understand. It was not shade. People were like, are you trolling? And like, I assure you, I am in many, many ways.
But not
that was not in that specific way. Okay. There was some confusion over my reaction to John Hopkins receiving a dance music Grammy nomination. I was saying I was surprised because I like John Hopkins. And generally, the people who are nominated in that category are not that good. So sort of a weird, like, salute to whoever the publicity team working on John Hopkins is, because they figured it out. We did get some emails. We'll get to them, of people who actually listened to the Christina Aguilera and Gold Link song.
Okay.
We'll arrive at that.
Love that.
And I just want to extend, I don't think an apology is the right word, but I want to say that I read, after we recorded our Grammys episode, I read your interview with Brandi Carlile.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a great person.
Yeah, she gave a really nice interview.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure to speak with her. And yeah, immediately I was like, some people are going to feel guilty for the way they shaded Brandi Carlile this morning. You know, best of luck to Brandi Carlile, your 2019 album of the year favorite.
Yeah, it's everything I said stands. I just want to say everything I said stands. Yeah. However, she seemed lovely.
Yeah, an eloquent, humble woman. Yeah, read my interview with Brandi Carlile.
I found it both empathetic and wise, your interview. But anyway, questions. You guys, as usual, have been very, very thorough on the email. And in some cases, the text.
Mm-hmm. DM, fiery. Twitter @.
Yeah. Oh, definitely some couple hostile Twitter @s, if we're being honest. Some of y'all need to put it under control. But let's start. So we were listening to Cardi at the top. And friend of the pod, Julia Frakes, came through. Julia, just so you know, you can probably host Popcast for 2019 with the number of questions that you sent through. So I appreciate that. But I thought a very interesting question, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot after Jingle Ball, where I saw Cardi perform, and I use perform loosely. Question is, given that Cardi is such a quick study, what rap skills do you think she would benefit most from honing next?
Wow.
Right?
Really good.
Super good question.
Yeah.
So obviously, look, on the one hand, the performing, it's not technically a rap skill, but the performance was something I would like to see a little bit more of Cardi. But to be fair, she's had a busy year.
Yeah. Wait, you want to see her, like, breath control be better? Like, live rapping?
Or being on stage presence?
I'm asking you.
Oh, stage presence.
Okay.
Stage presence and understanding part of what a performer does, especially someone who's going to work with, like, 10 dancers, and it's like, where do I fit in relationship to this thing? Now, obviously, Cardi's gift is like, wherever she is, that's where the party is.
Right.
So there is that. But I did feel like in the garden, there was a little bit of like, you're getting lost up there.
It also wasn't her crowd. You saw her with a bunch of tweens.
It's
right?
True.
Like, you know, it was probably
also some like weird, like turned up 28-year-olds.
Sure, fair. I just feel like birthday bash is where you want to see Cardi, not Jingle Ball.
I mean, let's go. Let's go.
I'll be there.
So what do you think there are any skills she would benefit from honing or adding to her arsenal?
Hmm.
And here to me is a corollary question. Do you want Cardi to become more skilled?
See, that's where I was going.
I'm not sure I do.
What I don't want her to do is lose her accent in rapping, because I feel like, yeah, at all. Because I feel like that is one of her strengths, is that even when she raps, she sounds like she talks, and she's the best talker.
Best talker.
Therefore, she's a really good rapper. So I don't want those edges. Like, I feel like there are times when you can hear her not keeping up with a beat or like trying to cram in too many syllables, but I think that's the charm and I don't really want to sand down those edges.
Mm-hmm.
I think this happens naturally for most writers and most MCs. Like I think her personal life will shine through more, you know, her internal demons and whatnot. Like, you know, I think the first album was very much like broad strokes, I've arrived, with the exception of Be Careful, which, you know, she has said she wrote with Partisan Fontaine, who has been a great collaborator with her. And, you know, whether this was his story or her story or both, she obviously related to it. And I felt like this was one of the songs she had that had the most longevity for me this year. Like, I'm still finding parts in it to love. And I think, like, this kind of writing is something she's really good at. And I look forward to more of it, especially given her current relationship status.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and again, I don't know if the answer is, I'm not sure if skill is the thing. I guess if channeling internal mayhem into musical form is a skill, then it's that.
Yeah.
And I think we were already experiencing that, and that's why I chose to play Be Careful, because we're already experiencing the idea of Cardi as, you know, not a woman scorned necessarily, but someone who is not to be trifled with, or someone who is engaged with people who have done her wrong. And so I'd like to see more of that. Like, what's Cardi's Lemonade look like?
Right. I want her Instagram live in music form.
I wanna be your A-team. I wanna be your endgame, endgame. Big reputation, ooh, you and me, we got big reputations. Ah, and you heard about me, ooh, I got some big enemies. Big reputation, yeah. Bang, we tried to forget it, but we just couldn't. And I bury hatchets, but I keep maps of where I put them. Reputation precedes me. They told you I'm crazy. I swear I don't love the drama. It loves me, and I can't let you go. Your handprints on my soul. It's like your eyes are liquid, it's like your body's gold. You've been calling my bluff on all my usual tricks. So here's the truth from my red lips. I wanna be your
So we know it's been about 13 months, and you may have forgotten, but that is a song called Endgame, and that was from Reputation, the biggest reputation of Taylor Swift, featuring Future and Ed Sheeran, two great American rappers. And the next question, and I should, just for the public's knowledge, Joe has no prior knowledge. I've read all the questions.
I have not read a question.
Joe has not read any
There's
questions.
There's no prep that we
Because
went
I just feel like Joe is like jazz, and I just want to know his improvisational response. So this question is coming from Dylan Farnetti, who I believe might be a first-time emailer.
Great.
Does Taylor Swift still have a place in 2019? And I asked this question because we were just talking about this just before we started recording. She was practically shut out of the Grammys, while even Post Malone got an Album of the Year nomination.
Even Post Malone. He's one of the biggest artists in the universe.
He's the most important folk singer of the 2000s, of the 21st century. Is it her persona or her music that isn't making the impact that it used to? And is it too late for her to change course? There's some more, but that's kind of the essence. So, Joe, you want to throw your theory that we were just talking about?
Yeah, so I have no prior knowledge about what Taylor Swift is doing now that her Reputation tour is over. But
Taylor, call us.
If I had
Tree,
to guess.
Tree, call us.
Hi, Tree. I don't think Tree listens to the podcast.
You don't know?
She's a busy woman.
Are you sure? I feel like she maybe has someone listen to
it.
Yeah,
that'd be good. Yeah.
So hi, person who's listening on Tree's behalf.
Yeah, please put positive things in the notes that you leave on her desk. Tree is Taylor's publicist.
Just in case you did. Yes.
I think this was a very successful album, I will say.
Musically or financially?
I'll let you talk about music. I'd say, you know, it sold more than 3 million copies, you know.
Kind of a shrug, Taylor numbers.
For Taylor Swift, it is not a successful album.
It's a dud.
For anyone else, it's a gigantic success.
Yes.
You know, I think Delicate was sort of a sleeper radio hit. It's really stuck around this year. I think this wasn't the flop that people wanted it to be, and that I think when you mention, is it her persona? I think, yes, a large part of the reaction we've seen to the Taylor Swift of the last 18 months has been
persona-based.
Persona-based.
Yeah, and I think just even you saying wanted it to be, like yes. the want, I feel like they're, look, it's not that Taylor has gone this far in her career without backlash, right? Or without negativity or without critique. It's been critique at every step of the way. But there was an interesting thing that was happening probably on the two albums just before this, where she had achieved some kind of pop ubiquity, but at the same time, people who were like, I'm too cool for Taylor Swift were kind of like, ah, okay, all right, I get it. And so there was this maybe like 2-year stretch.
It was undeniable between where it was Fearless, Red, and 1989.
And all the problems were solved. And then this album happened, and I understand intellectually why Taylor made these choices to go like more headlong into pop and collaborate a little bit more broadly. But it does seem that two things happened. One, her core audience maybe totally wasn't there with her. And number two, people who were prepared to find a thing to be skeptical about, it was served to them on a platter.
Sure, when you have a song featuring Future and Ed Sheeran.
Which slaps. Okay.
But anyway, my point was this is the first time Taylor's career has taken a downward dip, I think, you know, in terms of raw numbers. And then on top of that, she was nominated only for one Grammy, nothing in the big categories. And I would not be shocked if this helps accelerate her return yes. to the guitar.
That's a thing. We've been knowing.
Yes. Maybe it's the piano.
I mean, I've known since I knew you were trouble.
Sure.
That we were going to end up back here.
Right.
So didn't know if it was going to take 5, 10, yeah. or 15 years, but we're
I think
get there.
She's reached the apex of this sort of maximalist pop sound. I think 1989 was, you know, the biggest pop album imaginable. And Reputation, she went a little further into like trap drums and features and all kinds of
Taylor and Bad Bunny coming soon.
Yeah. I just think like, you know, and the tours also were just huge pop extravaganzas. But there was a little section in the show when she put on an acoustic guitar and she played songs that she doesn't usually play on tour. And I think
sang to my heart.
Strip, you know, if she strips back, I think it's going to work magically.
It's look, we have known, we have spoken about before, probably on podcast, but certainly off podcast. Taylor has a Joni Mitchell blue in her somewhere. The question is like, who's going to bring it out of her? Is it going to be a marketer? Is it going to be a producer? Is it going to be a parent? Is it going to be a paramour? A param or even a paramour, you know, yeah. You know, who's going to be the person to like definitively like course help her course correct.
And I think she will. I think she is a course corrector. And yeah. I think she is ultimately still in charge of her operation.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if she's spending the winter strumming her guitar.
Wearing a great chunky sweater.
Yeah.
Wrapped in a blanket.
Yeah.
Strumming an acoustic.
Like from the White Horse video.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Fingers crossed.
Look, maybe not this time, but
I think in the next two albums, yeah. for sure.
Yeah.
I'm of the mindset it's the next album.
Okay.
Because especially with the new deal that she signed, I think it's kind of like the amount of money it's involved seems to be like too substantial
yeah.
to basically like screw it up.
Sure. Taylor Swift has a new record deal. Taylor Swift has a new Netflix special. They're going to air the Reputation tour on Netflix.
I'm good.
You know, yeah, I just think, I don't think we've seen the last of her, to answer the question most basic way. Like,
yeah.
It may have seemed like she got marginalized this year, but like, she's still Taylor Swift.
He trying to 69 like Tekashi, call him Papi, worth the ASAP, keep me rocky. I'm from New York, so I'm cocky. Say he with my posse, caught me Chloe like Kardashian. Keep this in Versace, said I'm pretty like Tinashe.
Put it all up in his face, did I catch a case?
Gang just caught a body, but I never leave a trace. Face is pretty out for days, I get chips, I ask for lace. I just sit back and when he done, I be like, yo, how to taste?
Yo, how to taste?
I don't really want no friend. I don't really want no friend.
Hey, yo, Draco got that kickback. When they kick back, you can't get your shit back. In fact, it's that bit that I hate small talk. I don't fuck with your chat. AC just stopped working, so they hit me, told me, bring my wrist back. I'm through rocking. rocking fashions that got all these bitches like, yo, what's that?
I don't really want no friends,
nah.
Eeny, meeny, money, moe. I catch a right by her toe. If she ain't me and Nikki, kick that right through the door.
Straight
I don't really want no friends. My old just bought this Benz. Nikki just hopped in the street. Now I won't see that bitch again. Eeny, meeny, money, moe. I catch a right by her toe. If she ain't me and Nikki, kick that right through the door.
Young money bunny, colorful hair, don't care. I don't really want no friends. I don't really want no friends, no. I don't really want no friends.
While we are speaking about careers in decline or retreat, this question's coming from Hugo Cervantes. Hugo. The subject heading is, please save Nikki. The short answer is, no can do. here's the question. What does Nicki Minaj have to do or stop doing? Maybe that's the real question.
Is that in the question?
Yes. To turn her career around. Nikki had a rough year, Fifi being the worst, and arguably the best being the To Freedom meme on Queen Radio. Okay. What does she have to do to turn around in 2019?
Thank you, Hugo, for listening to the third hour of Queen Radio.
Real talk. Hugo also, Hugo has a PS in here that we should just say. PS, Karen, Honey is top five albums of the year, period. I do want to say Karen's on vacation in a sunnier clime than we are.
Miss you, Karen.
I did ask if she was interested in calling in.
Depending on the questions we pick, we might have to just call her in.
Anyway. Yeah, it's true. I might just have to blindside her with a call.
John, but, you start. What do you is Nikki? It was a dark year for Nikki.
Focus on your craft.
Yes. Focus on yourself.
Focus on your legacy. Yeah. A wise woman said that, and I take it to heart personally. And I assume Nikki should as well. I assume everyone in this room, Joe, yeah. You should, Pedro, you should. We're all out here focusing on our craft and focusing on our legacy. Here's a thing that happens when you are famous for a really long time, especially in largely uncontested ways. You become extremely complacent and you become entitled to whatever level of accolade is coming your way. Nikki had been unchallenged for so long, not that her only challengers could be other female rappers, but the way that hip hop is constructed, that is often how things are presented. So she occupied a place of heavy privilege for a long time.
And dominance.
Yeah.
I mean, she earned it.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of those years.
I don't think she saw Cardi coming in the same way that, like.
Don't say it.
I'm going to say it. What's my guy's name? From Queens, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
Crowley.
Joe Crowley. I thought you were going for more national politics, no, so I'm fine with
that. Yeah, yeah. I think Nikki is the Joe Crowley in this situation. I honestly think she had no idea. I think she was like, do your cute little mixtapes, do your Instagram. That's not real. And Nikki was so busy maintaining sort of like the level of acclaim that she was used to, which is not built the same way anymore. You don't build a rap star in 2018 the way you built a rap star in 2008. And I don't think Nikki understood that the rules had changed. And so I think the first thing she should do is obviously like awaken herself to the changed climate. The second thing is I do think Cardi was right. This Nikki record that came out this year was mixed.
Here's a question for you that I've asked you off mic.
Yes.
Does Nicki Minaj have a good album?
Oh, at all?
Yes.
In life. No.
Not counting mixtapes.
A great album or good album?
A very good album.
Like over 7 out of like a 7.5 out of 10?
Yeah, sure.
No. There's nothing that's that consistent.
And you hear this, you always hear this among hip hop fans, right? Like we want mixtape Wayne. We want mixtape Nikki.
Yeah.
We want mixtape Drake, not so much, but 50, you know.
No mixtape Drake.
Push, yeah. Whatever, you know, like, oh, stop making these albums. Like, for too long, there's been this idea that to make a rap album has to be an event. It has to have your mm-hmm. club song. It has to have your emotional outro. It has to have your mother song.
Yep.
It has to have the big feature. And Nikki's done that more than anyone in terms of sort of big, bloated statement albums.
With like 9 different styles on them. Yes. I think she really believed it when someone told her the way to become a pop star is to have something
to
for
check
everyone.
Every box. Yeah, right. That's how we ended up with Starships and that whole thing. I think if she made...
Salute to Peter Rosenberg.
Yeah, whatever.
History has forgiven you. Sort of.
Yeah, Peter Rosenberg was right. T-shirts coming soon on Zazzle.
That's the real podcast merch.
I think if she... And maybe this is too simple, but I think if she made 10 Chun-Li good form
totally
type
agree.
Records,
yep.
put it out with barely any promo, none of this, you know, Queen, like... hashtag for 6 months, like, just if she just dropped a handful of good rap songs, I think people would be pretty happy.
Yeah,
and I think some weight would be lifted off of her and she wouldn't have whatever sort of professional competitive anxiety she seems to be.
I absolutely agree. The moments of Nicki in 2018 that I was most excited about were the rap moments.
Yeah.
Like, I remember like talking to you one day and being like,
you like Chun-Li. You whispered that you like
Chun-Li. I like Chun-Li. And I've been hearing them play it from time to time on the radio. And it's just like, it was enjoyable to hear her do the thing that she's really exceptional at.
And it's not perfect, but it's enough.
No. And it doesn't matter if it's perfect, because if you're doing a B-plus version of the thing that you're great at, it's always going to be better than a D version of a thing you're okay at. Even an A version of the thing that you're okay at.
And it's a little disappointing to be like, just go backwards and like do the thing you used to do. Like, obviously artists don't want to operate that way, but like sometimes it's just a palate cleanser. Like, even this Good Form video, which has sort of gone under the radar, but she added Lil Wayne to the song Good Form from Queen. I think it is getting a little bit of radio play. They're both in the video. It just feels better. It's lighter.
Okay.
Yeah. Two step with me. One, here comes the two to the three to the four. Everybody drunk out on the dance floor. Baby girl ass jiggle like she want more. Like she a groupie and I ain't even know a tour. Maybe cause she heard that rhyme hardcore. Or maybe cause she heard that I buy out the stores. Bottom of the ninth in the city got the score. If not, I gotta move on to the next floor. Here comes the three to the two to the one. Homeboy tripping, he don't know I got the gun. When they come to pop, we do this for fun. You ain't got one stick and you better run. Now I'm in the back getting eaten from my huns. Why she going down, I'm bragging on what I done. She smoking my stuff saying she ain't having fun. She give it back, now you don't get none. Everybody.
Our next question comes from Adam Thomas. Adam wants to know, how well do you think the rap music that has come out in the past year will play in another 20 years? To which the answer is, it will still slap.
That's your answer.
That's it. Do you have anything to add?
Did you play Tipsy because you're like, what is the Tipsy of 2018?
Yeah, I sort of assume the
is it Fifi?
Yeah, no, I sort of assume the subtext of this question is like, will people listen to Lil Pump songs? Not these terrible Lil Pump, like the good Lil Pump songs, but like, will we look back and be like, oh, how do we let that happen? Did you see the meme that was going around of the three poles holding up a building, and the building was trash Eminem and Tupac, and the three poles were Lil Pump X and Juice WRLD, maybe?
I know, I didn't see this.
And like the floor was the rap game.
I missed that one.
So I made that meme.
I think there are so many rap songs right now. Like,
and sure, it's hard to. I'm assuming that's a subtext. Adam, to be fair, if that's not your subtext, you can email us again and I'll
I think
answer
so. Yeah. I mean,
but I do think so, because I just feel like I grew up in year after year, generation after generation, where people were like, well, this stuff's never going to last.
Right.
And like,
and it always does.
It always does.
Or I mean, some of it always does.
Yeah. I mean, no one. I mean, when Nelly came out with Country Grammar.
Yeah.
Like, people were not like, and this will be in the Library of Congress. And yet, it's probably in the Library of Congress.
I mean, Drake Night 2040 in, like, whatever gentrified neighborhood exists in New York then. Like,
when we have all gentrified, like, Central Staten Island.
Yeah, like, it's going to be bananas.
I will be listening to Black Boy JB 20 years from
I
now.
I think so, too. Yeah.
I will be listening to... You'll be listening to Roddy Ricch.
Yeah.
For sure. Maybe, I'll definitely be listening to Gunna. Yo, Gunna's definitely going to be like doing like shaman music in 20
By
years.
Then.
Yeah. I mean, he's already doing chum music, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't worry. I don't worry about the legacy of this stuff, even if it feels super disposable now. It's a time capsule.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it doesn't, I guess the thing is, it doesn't have to serve that purpose, but I think we will all, some hipster, if that's even a word that people use 20 years from now, who is literally being born right now during the recording of this episode, will have a SoundCloud rap retro night at some club in some city today, 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And kids will go and they'll have like fake face tattoos. They'll like screw their hair up. They'll wear like things dangling from their belts.
And I think they'll still be arguing about whether you're allowed to listen to XXXTentacion.
It will be called Esquedet, a SoundCloud rap revival. So, yes, the answer is yes. Okay, with apologies to Liz Pelly, I'm going to field a serious question about a potential positive impact of Spotify. But we want you to know, Liz, that we know the truth. But we just want to preface it by saying that. This question comes from Ben Metchen. Ben actually has a couple good questions in here. We're going to start with the Spotify one. And this is something that Joe and I are addressing in other formats, but we'll talk about it a little bit here. How significant is Spotify now to the pop landscape? And for all its faults, has it initiated a globalization or reconfiguration of pop worth being excited about? What is the role of Spotify playlists and genrefication as opposed to maybe old world, scare quote critics, excuse me, in shaping what we're listening to and what we call it? In the U.S., I think Spotify has been important in popularizing Latin trap and reggaeton and maybe K-pop, as well as crossover hits in playlists like Global X and Baile Reggaeton. In the UK, playlists have done the same thing, following old imperial diasporic roots by documenting and advancing the rise of Afrobeats and Afro Swing, displacing the traditional Jamaican focus of UK urban radio, as well as UK drill, for example, Homerton B, through playlists like Afro Bashment and Rap UK.
Great email.
Can we get Afro Bashment on our Spotify? I definitely don't spend enough time on Spotify to have gotten to the Afro Bashment playlist, but maybe I should. That sounds like where I want to be. Like, actually, everything in this email makes me think Spotify is great.
Good, yeah, good sell, Spotify.
Wait,
PR.
Does Ben work for Spotify? Wait, hold on one sec. All right, Ben, I'm gonna check your LinkedIn later. I don't, this is sending from a Gmail, but I maybe
so for a dissenting opinion, please read Liz Pelly's Streambait Pop, yeah, new column in The Baffler. She writes a lot about streaming there.
She talks about a guy who loves Spotify Core.
Yes, a producer.
I love that guy.
Yes, who took quickly to the term Spotify Core, which may or may not have originated on podcasts.
TBD, something to know. Historians will tell the story.
Yeah.
But so, yes, everybody take 14 minutes and go read that piece and then come back and let's talk about Afro Bashment and Baile Reggaeton. We have argued, and I have argued in a piece that came out recently, that there is this kind of asymptotic thing that's happening among genres, which is things that we have historically thought of as emerging from separate places and scenes and countries and ideas are actually all kind of approaching each other with certain sonic choices and production choices and vocal styles and whatnot. So I do think that is happening hand in hand. I don't know if I would credit Spotify with that. I feel like Spotify is maybe instinctively popularizing a thing that is already happening.
Right. The globalization, yes, of a hip hop indebted sound, basically. Yes,
exactly. And on top of that, well, I guess I should say on a micro level, Yes, I think the fact that you can get all these K-pop records very easily now and not have to, like, create YouTube playlists or, like, get zip files from, like, media share links, yes, it just makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, the barrier to entry for people who may be vaguely interested in genres that they would not spend money on.
Yeah.
That Spotify is great for. You know, if 100%. You're like, I heard a song in Spanish, I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear more. It's a resource.
Yeah. I mean, I just, even on a personal level, like I remember 10 years ago when I started this job, or 11 years ago, I would hear a record on La Mega. I didn't have Shazam. I didn't have Spotify. I didn't have anything. All I had
was... You didn't really speak Spanish.
I don't speak Spanish. And so I would like literally be in the car, either scribbling down 5 or 6 words that I can Google, or typing into my phone a few words I can Google. Then I would find the song, maybe. And then if I found the song, maybe it was on YouTube. Maybe it wasn't. But I had no real entry point. I remember there was a guy, Luis Enrique, I wrote about, and that's how I found him. And then I had to like order his record on Amazon. You know, like it was... Think of the process. That's like a week-long process.
Right, and for somebody who's not getting paid for it, they're right. just not going to jump through those hoops.
Right. But now, apparently, I'm going to go and listen to the Afro Bashman playlist.
Right.
Sorry, Liz. But I'm excited to learn. You know, like this is, I think, is an entry point, certainly for a curious person. And that's kind of where a lot of streaming operates. Streaming is useful for a person who's curious. It's useful for a person who's passive, but it's also useful for a person who's curious. You can just say, oh, I want to know about Jay Huss.
Right. Boom. Lots of cool rabbit holes.
Yes.
All that said, you know, caveats being, yes, similarly.
Capitalism is evil.
Yeah, capitalism is evil. The music that's going to get pushed in front of your face is going to be often male, often...
Record company sponsored, promoted.
Yeah, backed by major labels. It's going to be hard... You're going to have to do a little extra digging if you want to find independent releases or marginalized people.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to us, something we've said over and over again, which is that Spotify is basically serves the same purpose as a gatekeeper as radio.
Mm-hmm.
And as radio did, and radio still does for in certain genres, but there's more variety.
There's more room. There's more room. Yes. Just a very, very quick shout out to my roommate, my second year of graduate school in London. Her name was Karina. Karina, this was in 1998, and Karina at that time was working on a dissertation about how all of the internet was eventually going to be owned by 3 companies, and it wasn't the sort of utopian paradise that was being promised. It was actually just, she was doing that in 98.
An early doomsayer.
So, Karina, you were right.
Go out my house, sure that you just waiting to see. So I'm gonna roll up in the club with them, report that next week. Just wanna see who I am or sniffing some cool. I know by the time I'm finished this line, I'ma hear this on the radio.
Okay. Once upon a time in College Park, where they live life fast and they scared of dark. There was a little nugget by the name of Chris. Nobody paid him any mind, no one gave a shit. No one he could rap, no one lit the hand. So he went about his business and devised a plan. Made a CD, then he hit the block.
There's something undefinable that beckons travelers back to the greater Fort Myers area in southwest Florida year after year. It feels like bare feet on soft white sand beaches that give way to gently lapping waves. It looks like the breathtaking abundance of wildlife, colorful birds, dolphins, manatees, and more, dwelling in lush mangrove ecosystems and translucent Gulf waters. It tastes like fresh coastal cuisine served at sunset at a waterfront restaurant. What will draw you back to Fort Myers? Go to visitfortmyers.com for more inspiration.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, is there a hospital nearby? is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
That was a little blast from the past. That was something from the Holotronics mixtape, which those of us who were alive in the early 2000s remember was a party and a DJ situation. That was the sort of world's introduction to Diplo. And this is for one of Ben's other questions, which I think is worth considering. Looking back over the last 15 years, Diplo is the most significant musical figure of our generation.
It's not a question,
discuss.
My friend. Wow. He's made the most out of the least, for sure.
Wow. Damn.
No, I mean, and he said that to me. You know what I mean? Like, this is a man who just wanted to throw some parties for his friends in Philly or New York or whatever.
I drove with Kay down to a party there. We went. It was a Halloween party. We went. We had a great time. We drove back at like 5 in the morning. You know, hung out at a road stop on the way. It was a good night.
Look, I think he would have been happy doing that for the next 20 years. You know, like,
but now he's happy doing other things.
Look, do I think Diplo is ambitious?
Shouts to everyone who's ever told me a good Diplo story.
Yes, I think Diplo is ambitious, but do I think he thought that he would have the amount of money and influence he has now? No. I don't know. I mean, like, it just so happened that somebody with really good taste, who's also a handsome white guy, dovetailed with the explosion of EDM and basically got to pretend like he was a part of that so he could make money in Vegas and then turn around and do whatever he wanted with that money.
Also, it's important to add that, sort of building on the previous question that Ben asked, which is Diplo was doing a thing that later producers caught up to, which is sort of importing global ideas into American pop formats. This is something that he was considered forward thinking for.
And criticized for.
Yeah, and definitely early appropriation
conversations.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. Like, you read my Major Lazer review of their SOBs album release. You know, it's like that stuff was all happening back then. But, you know, then he went and worked with Beyonce. So it's like, well, you know. There you go.
And I think the reason Diplo always got away with it, so to speak, in a similar way to Drake, is that he put on so many artists and the local artists always messed with him.
Yeah.
Like, they always ended up liking him, you know, like.
And he went to he went to the Congo. He went to Jamaica. Like, he was very much like, I want to go where the thing is being made.
And find the person who's doing the coolest stuff and show the world that person.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get all of the criticism that exists out there for Diplo, and I think it's valid. I think it's interesting intellectually to discuss. But I think, like, he's – I've said this before in pieces and on podcasts too. Like, you can't discount the how much of music is about, like, hanging out.
Oh, it's so true.
There's so much downtime.
Are you good in the room?
Are you a good hang?
Yeah. Like the Benny Blanco.
Exactly.
Story.
And Benny Blanco is, I think, a student of Diplo in that way. You know, that they're just like, people just like having them around. They have good ideas. They're willing to tell famous people when they're doing something that's bad or when they're doing something that could be cooler, like a Justin Bieber or a Beyonce or whatever. And they're willing to take it. Like the classic story of Rihanna telling Diplo that he was playing airport reggae for her. Like, we only know that story because Diplo told it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, he's around and he's down and he's like self-aware enough that nobody can kill him.
And to be fair, Diplo's done very well with airport reggae.
Yeah, of course. As has Rihanna.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Come on.
No, you're not.
Don't hurt me, Navy.
I don't know. Navy didn't get this far into the episode, I don't think.
I don't know. What do you think? Diplo important? Certainly important, but I mean, definitely like important. One of the most important. Definitely had his hands in a lot of stuff.
He had his hands, and he was an axis around which a lot of things revolved. And I think that can't be understated. Also, in addition to him being a good hang, in addition to him being able to say to a famous person, this works, this doesn't work, and sort of cool hunting all these scenes and local stars, he really was willing to put things that did not seem like they should be in the same space, and make them effective. And I think Skrillex learned a little bit side by side with that, with the production, especially with the Bieber stuff. That stuff was important. And like, if you look at like the reason that Justin Bieber still has a career is because I think he let Diplo and Skrillex basically like use him like clay.
You stick out of the crowd, baby, it's a no-brainer. It ain't the hard to choose. Him or me, be for real, baby, it's a no-brainer. You got your mind on loose. Go hard and watch the sunrise. One night it changed your whole life. Up top, drop top, baby, it's a no-brainer. Put him up. What you been waiting on this whole time? I blow the brains out of your mind. And I ain't talking about physically, I'm talking about mentally. She looking, she look like she nasty. She looking, she look like she classy. She looking, just look at her dancing. She looking, I took her to the mansion. You stick out of the crowd, baby, it's a no-brainer. It ain't the hard to choose. Him or me, be for real, baby, it's a no-brainer. You got your mind on loose.
You guys sent so many questions, and I am so disorganized that I cannot find this question. So I'm just going to I'm gonna loosely interpret what the question was. So if you sent it, I apologize. I don't have the name in front of me. So what's up with Justin Bieber's career? Does he have an opportunity to kind of like resuscitate himself? And is the logical next move for Justin Bieber working with a SoundCloud rapper?
How has it not happened already?
It's a little weird, right? I think because Justin Bieber doesn't care about making music. I think
because he hasn't made music since SoundCloud rap has existed.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he's sung like three hooks on songs in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But if he were
isn't Chance the Rapper a SoundCloud rapper?
Well. Well.
In medium, not in
genre. That is true, not in spirit.
Yeah.
I can see there being a Justin Bieber Trippy Red song in the same way that there have been Justin Bieber Travis Scott songs and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I guess my thing with Bieber, and I've said this like time and time again, I just want to hear Bieber sing like acoustic R&B.
Journals. Like,
yes, that's all I want to hear from him. Not that he's not good at other things and not that he hasn't had success. He's had bigger success with other kinds of things. And like, I think ultimately, whatever Diplo Skrillex thing was happening with Justin 4 years ago now.
Is that 4 years ago? Does
it feel purpose?
Like, yeah.
No. I think it was.
All right.
Three?
Sure.
3 to 4.
Yeah.
I think 4, though. Yeah, seriously. That's a long time. But I think there may be a version of that where, like, some, like, Nick Mira or whoever is, like, all of a sudden producing Justin Bieber records.
Oh, yeah. I could see that for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, I'd still like Justin Bieber over some Metro Boomin' Beats. You know, like, I think he'll be back. I think it's actually good for his career that he's taken this time away from music. Seems, you know, from all accounts that it's good for his personal life. He's married now. We don't know that he's not healthy, so that's good. But I think he'll be back, and I think he'll continue to be huge. I think they don't, you know, Scooter and co, they don't mess up a lot. And I think...
No, but I do think that Justin has become something of a conscientious objector.
Yes.
And this is something that was true on the last tour as well. I mean, I feel like the kind of...
Right.
The narrative of the last tour was like, I am a boy trapped in a box. Please, like, help me to escape this box.
When, as also, you pointed out...
Also, shouts to Lord.
Yeah, shout out to Lord, who copied Justin Bieber's glass box on tour.
Sonya, don't be mad at us. Sonya, don't be mad. Don't unfollow us. but yes, okay, so Justin did glass boxes first. And Justin was trapped.
Invented cubes.
He did. He invented Lucite and he invented cubes. So he was trapped in that box for what, like 4 months of a tour?
Yeah, in which he did not sing.
It was very impressive. How do you do an entire performance with no voice? So Justin...
He doesn't love this game.
No, not at all.
This hamster wheel.
No, I bet he's done more singing in like Hillsong ceremonies than he has in the studio in the last 2 years.
And that's fine.
I totally agree. But like, what do you think, Justin? Is he going to like make a play for relevance? Or is he going to do like make Jack Johnson records for like in 5 years?
I think whatever Justin Bieber does is relevant.
Jack Johnson records?
Yeah, I'm ready.
AKA Dominic Fike
records? Yeah, Justin Bieber, Dominic Fike duet coming soon.
Yo, honestly, I think if I was Dominic Fike, I'd be like, the hell with that guy. That guy's old.
About Justin Bieber.
Yeah, seriously. Dominic Fike, if you're really about your business, don't duet with Justin Bieber. Okay, here's a question from a friend of the pod, Ryan Sartor. Now lives in Los Angeles. Shout out to Ryan for picking up and starting a new life on the other side of the country.
And still listening to podcasts.
I mean, we appreciate that. I mean, to be fair, the internet is everywhere.
Oh, I know, yeah, but, you know.
But we appreciate that.
I consider this a New York show.
That Wow. Where were we in New York Magazine 69 Things to Love About Living in New York? You can listen to podcasts where it's recorded. Dear podcast team, a personal question. With Stan culture reaching a fever pitch in 2018 and at least one journalist losing her job after critiquing Nicki Minaj. Almost accurate. Sort of true.
Basically.
Do you struggle with using social media knowing that you will continue to be attacked by fans of certain musicians? Do you anticipate your relationship to social media changing in 2019? This is a very good question. So I wrote about the X record recently. Not for any particular joy in writing about X. But it's going to be the number one album in the country. It's important. It's a thing that people are listening to. It's a thing that critics should engage with. And a lot of what I wrote about was how frustrating it is to cover things like this and how the audience for this kind of coverage is evolved and or rather devolved. And I definitely, like, within an hour of it getting posted, got a death threat. Like, that just happened. And, you know, there were not as many. I think we didn't promote the review that much. So I don't think it like made it as far out into the world as maybe it otherwise would have. But I definitely got a lot of negative emails and at least one that was like extremely violent. I don't know, man. I've been thinking a lot about Twitter. I have taken it off of the homepage of my phone.
So you put it on the third page.
It's on the fourth page.
So you can still get to it.
I can still get to it. But it's not like the first thing I used to like very kind of like absentmindedly sure. Like pick up my phone and just like look at Twitter.
Yeah.
And I don't really do that. Or I do it a lot less than I used to. But I've been thinking about like what the function of Twitter is. And I don't mean just for critics and journalists. I mean just broadly speaking. Some of this is generational. So like put my old man cap on for a minute. There is this thing that's happening on Twitter where like I do think a certain generation, maybe like 18 to 25 or whatever, like are hashing out like the battles that will set the stage for kind of like how culture will evolve and spread in the next 10 years. I do think this is the staging ground for it.
Twitter specifically or social media?
I do think Twitter specifically. I think it happens in other platforms, but I do think Twitter, from an ideological perspective, I think a lot
in
of
that's happening. In a way that, say, like the Academy would have done it like 25, 30 years ago. Like, you know, conversations would start on college campuses and set the tone for.
Meant, like the Recording Academy.
No, excuse me.
Again, peace out, Neil Fortnow.
In academic.
Yes, I do think that. Because I do think that ideas are being generated bottom up. I do think that there's the lack of hierarchy of voice is very potent. And I do think the group think where people like these waves, like when earlier this year on Popcast, Justin and I were talking about like cancellation, but not really. It's like it's waves of thought and they're just very fast waves. I do think all that hashing out is setting the table for like legitimate discourse down the line. But I also think that it's happening at such like a high volume and high intensity that it's very hard. If you are participating in it, then that is you are full time participating in it. You saw the Chris Hayes thing in the paper where he was talking about Twitter being like smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day and being like, but I got to sample the product. Yeah. So I'm trying to do less of that.
But not specifically because of fan culture.
No, it's part of it, though, right. Because I do think part of the hashing out is you saw this happen with the Ebro Kodak thing the other day where it's like fans of Kodak wilding out on Ebro right. for asking a question. Although, to be fair, Ebro, you didn't really ask a question.
Ebro asked, he said that one day he was going to ask Kodak about his sexual
assault.
It was
like 45 seconds of like
preamble.
Yes. And then sort of. I don't know what it was. It wasn't a question. It was like a throw.
Right. And Kodak didn't want to talk about it, and he walked out.
Yes. Yeah.
And what you saw was...
And to be fair, I've asked people hard questions, and I'm not any better at it than Ebro.
Sure, it's really difficult.
It's not pleasant.
To look somebody in the eye and ask them...
About, like, did you do this terrible thing?
Yeah. And then, yeah, you saw people immediately say, oh, Ebro, you're a fool for even bringing this up.
Ebro, you should get beat up. Ebro,
you're the feds, whatever. Yeah. And then you sort of had the backlash to the backlash, which was people saying, actually, like, media journalists have to ask artists these questions. And we're not publicists for them, and we're not fans.
And also, like, Kodak, if Kodak should be mad, he should be mad at his handlers for not prepping him for the fact that he could face a question about this.
Sure. It's sort of extremely telling. This is a tangent, but it's extremely telling that he didn't even think he could possibly be asked about it.
Does seem that way.
While on a press tour.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, not with us.
Sure. But I think, you know, ultimately... You know, I lock a few of my social media accounts at various points this year because of pop fan groups? Sure.
Yeah.
But that's just because I don't want to look at the comments and I don't want my mom to look at those comments. You know, like it's not.
Do you ever delete comments?
No.
I've deleted a couple.
You've deleted a couple. I think, like, as men on the internet, it's obviously just a much different situation. Like, I don't think I think if you wrote the nastiest review in the world of an X album, I don't think you'd get half of the negative.
Not even.
Comments of any woman writing a pretty positive review of the same artist. You know, like, I just think it's a different world. And I... fortunately do not feel affected by it overall. I think it can be bad for thought. It can be bad for, you know, groupthink in terms of popular culture, but personally it doesn't weigh on me.
Yeah. You're also a little bit more native to the generation. Right. I think you grew up with it. You invented blogs. So I think I do think it comes
I take the good with the bad.
Yeah, no, it comes a little bit. But did you know that 10 years ago? Did you understand 10 years ago that the good did come with the bad? Did it come with the bad as frequently as it does now?
Yeah. I mean, I think LiveJournal in middle school and high school was like super toxic.
Was it?
At times. Yeah. And people used it to bully and whatever. You know, the same way that I think any new technology is often turned against vulnerable people. So I don't have any illusions about the nastiness that come from the internet. But I just think personally, in terms of my role as a professional, it doesn't really factor into how I think about the way we do our jobs.
I guess I feel like the right, in quotes, answer is that it doesn't affect anything. But I do feel like a little bit of a sense of dread anytime that I know that I have to engage with
a subject that's going to get you that kind of response.
Yeah, it just from a generational perspective, I mean, you got to consider, like, when I first was reviewing albums for anything, it was for monthly magazines where you would email it off and someone would set it on a page, and then it would go off and be published, and then that magazine would sit on a newsstand or get mailed to a subscriber. How would I ever – there's no feedback loop. I'm not saying that's a better way, but I'm saying as a school of training, that's a very different thing from now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think as a human being who feels things and it's like a tactile experience when it comes to culture, yeah, I do feel like a little bit of a sense of dread. I've only gone private once this year. I thought about
once this year.
Maybe I thought about it one or two other times. I think I only actually did it one time. And I guess my goal is just to be less on social media. I don't want to be one of those people that's just like, go smell a flower. Like, I don't care, man. Like, don't smell flowers. Like, that's, don't do that.
Just watch House Hunters.
That's
something.
Right. Yo, seriously, you know how much good TV there is? Dead ass. Plenty of good TV to watch. So anyway, catch me out here watching HGTV in 2019. That's my answer.
Hey, that's the call, hey, from back in the day. Hey, yeah, just a youngin' with a dream. Trying to get this money, yeah, I'm trying to get this cream. Not a lot know what I mean, for this rap shit, I'm a fiend. Not one to talk about popping pills and sipping lean. Just a passing for 50, I'm trying to get up in a spleen. This is my
okay, so I'm just gonna read something from Michael Harris, who Michael sent a 3-part email. Michael, I'm going to skip the questions, not because they're not good, but because your comments are really funny. So Michael's comment first is, P.S. So Robot Ass Charlie Puth is one of the best albums of the year, but Brandi Carlile gets no love.
Wow.
My dad listens to her all the time. The Joke is a great post Adele song, and her album got a very respectable 6.9 on Pitchfork.
They reviewed the Brandi Carlile album on Pitchfork?
Nice. 6.9. Album slaps. And then PPS, we're really, this is a lot. NPR All Things Considered 2018 Music and Review Podcast. I don't know her. Opens with Brandi Carlile. Suck it, John. Love you, though.
Wow. This is Ann Powers sent you this email?
I'll say hi to all our friends at various NPR affiliates all around the country. We enjoy the work that you put into the world. Michael,
you deserved it. we'll just let it rest.
Yeah, I have no, like, what am I supposed to say to that? Like,
you already apologized to Brandi Carlile.
I did. And also, like, this is anything that Michael just said is more eloquent than anything I'm going to come up with in response. So, like,
Robot ass Charlie Puth.
So, thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. Oh, and also my favorite question, which I'm not going to answer just because the question is its own answer. This comes from William Brito, who, like, maybe now is Michael Harris just in another guise. I don't know. Here's the question. Why in God's name did you review Lil Wayne and Logic's albums at the same time? I don't know. I got nothing. I don't know why all the hate for Young Sinatra, though.
Sometimes the reviews just write themselves.
I mean, that's the thing.
You wake up after a fever dream filed a double review.
I know that I don't want to pull the screen back too much, but there are just days where, like, you're just looking at the pile and, like, all of a sudden you realize that Wayne and Logic are in dialogue with each other, and nobody, maybe I'm having visions. Maybe my brain really is frying. Cause like maybe nobody, it's like hearing voices that nobody else can hear. Cause I'm looking at it and I'm like, how is nobody up on this? How does nobody know that Logic and Lil Wayne are in dialogue? And I'm gonna tell y'all. So anyway,
what's another crazy double review you've done or talked about? I know we've bounced these back and forth a lot, but I feel like you have some classics.
Or just in general.
No, back in the day when you wrote a lot more double reviews.
Oh, I used to do some wild stuff, especially also with The Voice back in the day. I used to do I did like a pretty funny Master P Goody Mob double review back in the day.
Makes sense in retrospect, but probably felt radical at the time.
At the time, I think it was, I don't think anybody was reviewing Master P records really seriously at the time. I don't know. I'll dig up some good ones and tweet them. I've done some unusual ones.
Be your passion.
Okay, so that is Robin's Honey, Karen Gann's Memorial Popcast song. Juliana Yang emails us and says, Karen, this is a statement, but I have a question. A statement. Karen speaking about crying after listening to Honey was a really sincere and moving thing to hear, and I felt that. Thank you for sharing.
We miss Karen. We wish she was here.
I do.
We have a lot of questions. That would be perfect, I know. For Karen.
To be fair, I want to be honest. Also, there are so many good questions that I feel like we may have to like come back to this in like April or
early
March or something.
Year.
Yeah, yeah. There's sure. a lot going on in here. And there's a lot of stuff that if we prepped a little bit, we'd have better answers for. To be
as
fair,
usual.
Yeah, to be fair, we are winging it. Okay, so Joe, do you ever cry to music?
Not in a long time. I can be brought close to tears at shows,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily from the songs themselves, but seeing large groups of people enjoy something in like the most earnest way, like seeing people sing along to whatever, mm-hmm. like, and tens of thousands of people, that really gets to me. So like I well up when I'm like pulled into that moment. But I don't cry to music at home.
Huh.
Or on my own.
And that's interesting to hear you say that, because I had a, probably the closest I come to that experience, it wasn't this year, it was maybe like 2 years ago, was seeing a very early, I guess it was a, I don't remember if it was a Brockhampton show or a Kevin Abstract solo show in the Webster Hall basement studio, which doesn't exist anymore. And man, that crowd, just like, beautiful, like everybody's like 15 to 20, 100 hair colors, all races, all genders, all sexual identities, like just, you know,
yeah,
like I was basically like,
they're wrapped, it's like they're at church. Yeah,
yeah. And I was so moved watching them be moved and be moved in interface with Kevin Abstract and also with each other. There was a lot of stuff happening. I feel like a lot of shows I go to are very, like, monodirectional. People are staring at stage. Right. The stage is talking back to you.
Yeah.
There was real live community happening out in the audience.
Like a European DJ show.
Yes, right. And then the communion between what was happening on stage and the crowd. And it was also very potent for me because that was the first place I saw Odd Future and seeing that a different kind of passion, but also seeing that intensity. And it reminded me a lot. And I was like, oh, this is going to become the new normal. People are going to start building this kind of like fervent, intense, small thing.
Communities.
And, yeah. And then it's going to become what Brockhampton has become and right. what Odd Future has become. That show I almost cried at. But I should probably, I'll make it here. I'll just make an embarrassing confession. It's late in the episode and maybe people have stopped listening by now. So every now and again, I will write something that's like marginally embarrassing and Karen will take it out in a review.
To spare you?
Yeah.
Or because she just thinks it's not the place?
We'd have to ask Karen.
Do you guys talk about it or she just cuts it?
No, we talk about it.
Okay.
No, we definitely talk about it. Like she cuts it and then I'm like, why'd you cut that?
Yeah.
And she'd be like, do you really want to say that? I think she thinks she's doing me a favor, right?
Sometimes she probably is.
I would say 99 times out of 100, she probably is. But I'm going to take that favor back and embarrass myself. A real thing that I cried about, really, honestly. Man, I should retire after admitting this.
This is about the 6ix9ine album, John.
A real thing that I cried over, the title track, the final song, on J. Cole's For Your Eyes Only.
Wow. Is that the one where he talks about the almond milk?
No, that's the one where he talked about. It's not the one where he talked about almond milk. Jesus. That's relatable for a totally different reason. Right. Salute to all my lactose intolerant people. No, it's the one where he's rapping to the daughter of the street guy. Dead. And it's long. It's like 9 minutes. I don't know, man. Like the first couple times I heard it, I was just... Not to be like all old man
story,
about that.
You don't hear a lot of story
rap. You don't hear story rapping. You don't hear emotionally inflected story rapping. Like you just, and certainly like 9 minutes. It's just not a thing people do. And even when people did do it.
Some people do it. We just don't listen to them that closely.
That's true. We choose not to. But even when people were doing it more regularly, they didn't always do it very well.
Right. It's a different kind of writing.
Yeah. And I remember being really blindsided because this was the album where I was like, oh, is J. Cole good? And I know that was like an unpopular opinion that later became a popular opinion. You're welcome.
I'm staying out of this.
The point being, it was a real wake-up moment for me when it came to Cole. And I was really pretty interested and fascinated by that album even before that song. And then when that was how the album closed, I just got caught off guard.
That was a couple years ago.
It was 2016.
Do you cry to music regularly? Oh, you know what almost made me cry? Seeing Amazing Grace, the Aretha Franklin documentary. There were moments when
You didn't ask me for a Kleenex.
Where I could have gone, you know, I stopped myself. It didn't overcome me, but I felt the, you know,
I think I might have cried at Amazing Grace in a couple of moments.
Yeah. I mean, having heard that album and then to see it on a big screen is just, go see it.
If you can, please see it. I might have cried at Soccer Mommy this year. I've definitely cried at like Waxahachie in the past.
Yeah.
I'd say maybe like once or twice a year, something comes along that really hits me in those terms. And it's hard because like when you write about it, there's no non-corny way to be like, this thing made me cry.
Wait, so you wrote that in your J. Cole review and Karen cut it?
Next question. Okay. I know the final question is going to be, but before we get to the final question, I do want to say this is the last podcast of the year, again, unless something goes weird. And it has been a tremendous opportunity and a real learning experience for me and for all of us. And it's been a real unique gift that you guys who are listening and paying attention and tweeting and emailing are giving me and all of us. So I want to say thank you. I wanted to thank some people. I wanted to thank Joe Coscarelli, my partner in crime.
Happy to be here.
My good friend.
Always.
Grateful for you today and every other day. I want to thank Karen.
For putting up with us.
For putting up with us and for removing reference to my for protecting me from my
masculinity.
As Jenny Holzer might say, protecting me from what I want. So thank you to Karen and to JP, of course, who is the style originator of all it is that we do. So I remain very grateful that JP every now and again comes and blesses us with a real dose of history to let me know that I don't know anything about anything. So thank you, JP. Also, we have a lot of guests. Podcast has been really great to talk to a variety of people about all kinds of subjects. And when I went through the year's episodes, I was pretty blown away. We talked to a lot of people this year. In fact, I'm going to tell you everyone we talked to.
You're going to name them all?
Alphabetized. So if I forgot you, I apologize. I did try to do this thoroughly. So if I missed you, you have my apologies. But here's a quick rundown of everybody we talked to this year. And if we talk to them, you know that they're about their business. So go track them down and read their work. Charles Aaron, Michael Arsenault, Zach Barron, Jeff Benjamin, Alexandra Blair, Janae Bolden, Tom Bryan, Eric Renner Brown, Lawrence Burney, Justin Charity, The God, Andrew Chow, Bob Criscow, Hazel Sills, Naima Cochran, Josen Cummings, Manola Darius. Can you believe it?
We have Manola on the podcast.
Manola called in a podcast. Jim DeRogatis, Dogged AF, Josh Duboff, Chuck Eddy, Nolan Feeney, Kyle Gann, Nelson George, Vanessa Gregoriadis, real OGs on podcast. Good Lord. Corey Groh, Rob Harvilla, a.k.a. Pusha T's official biographer. Tarpley Hit, Young Gunna, It's the Real, Eric and Jeff Rosenthal, Rich Jesuiak, Joe Levy, Alan Light, Back-to-Back Killers, Evelyn McDonald, Matt Medved, Kenneth Montgomery, Wesley Morris, hey boo, Nick Murray, Joanna Nikos, Sheldon Pierce, Liz Pelly, only one Pelly this year, next year let's hope for two, maybe three. Nick Perez, Amelia Petrarca, Amanda Petrusic, Ann Powers, Brian Procell, Mark Richardson, David Ritz called in the podcast. Gia Rusinella, Jasmine Sanders, Vanessa Satin, Lauren Schlossman, Fail Gang, Julianne Escobedo Shepherd, Shura, Corey Sika, Ben Cesario, Laura Snapes, Doreen Sanfelix, James Thomas, Salome Chatillet, Gia Tolentino, Do You Even Pooth, Bro? Torres, David Turner, Reggie Ogu, Natalie Weiner, Chris Weingarten, Bonnie Wertheim, The Who Weekly Guys, Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber, Zach Wolf, Brianna Younger, Naomi Zeichner, my sister and emo, Lindsay Zolads.
Better luck next year, Willie Staley.
Oh! Does he work here? Finally, the person who's the third person at the table today, it's Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media, who continues to make us seem like we have half of an idea of what we are doing, when I truly assure you that we do not. So, very grateful to Pedro. Thank you for a great year, and here is to another greater year.
Now I'm going to cry.
Please, please cry. And to close out, I'm going to give the hardest question that we were asked. Honestly, this is the only question that I looked at and I was like, I do not know the answer. I don't even know that I can come up with an answer to this question. It comes from Juliana Shin, who I think has emailed us previously. And here's the question. It's very simple. It's six words. Is Maroon 5 a rock band?
I mean, to come in the middle of 1975 week, you know, seriously, when we're arguing about whether that's a rock band.
Exactly.
All I will say is the Adam Levine, I guess because they're playing the Super Bowl, is on the cover of a recent issue of Variety.
Okay.
And he gave a Q&A. Don't know why I read an Adam Levine Q&A.
I don't know why you did that either.
But they basically
also
asked
Adam Levine, real talk, did not come to the phone for a secondary for Charlie Puth. Shame on you, Adam Levine.
Wow. And they asked him, like, why did you start working with songwriters, especially after, you know, you wrote all the early Maroon 5 hits, and then, you know, this year they have, like, Girls Like You with Cardi B, co-written by Stara.
A song I never heard until it was the number one song in the country. I just had no idea that song existed. But anyway.
And he was basically like, I ran out of ideas and I still wanted to be famous. So, you know, that's a paraphrase. But so I think the answer that I will land on is not anymore.
Wait, what's the turning point?
I think, like, you know, some of those early songs that I remember seeing the videos for on VH1, they had guitars in them.
So I guess we're going to go out with old Maroon 5.
What's that first Maroon 5 hit called?
Harder to Breathe.
Yes.
How dare you say that my behavior is unacceptable, so condescending, unnecessary, but critical. I have the tendency of getting very physical, so watch your step, because if I do, you need a miracle.
That's our show. Thank you to everybody. Happy 2018 into 2019. You can listen to every podcast ever, although judging by these questions, you have. But feel free to tune again at nytimes.com/podcast. I think we're going to do another listener mailbag in a couple months, so keep those questions coming. Podcast at nytimes.com and subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Our producer, Pedro Rosado from Ed Media. We will be back in 2019.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.